Chiland Podcast with David Amoyal.
Benvenuti, as we would say in Italy. Welcome to all of you that don't speak Italian. Thank you so much for joining us for the first episode of the week of the Calcio Land podcast. So we have a fun show today. We are going to talk about Balotelli's demise at Brescia, talk about Serie A coming up with an algorithm to potentially decide the season, kind of revisit Rocco Commisso's first year at Fiorentina, and then we're going to get into some transfers. We have some interesting stuff to cover on transfers, and we are going to close the podcast with a treat. We have one of the best journalists in the game, Grant Wall, who launched his new podcast, Football. So we had him on, so I chatted with Grant about his podcast, but also asked him some fun questions, also tied it into Serie A. So a fun show, but let's start with Balotelli, and I'm joined by our dear friend, producer, co-host of the show, Alex Goldberg. So Alex, both you and I were, you know, cautiously optimistic for Mario coming back to Serie A at Brescia. I remember we had said, you know, not a big over-under on his goals. We were like, okay, this could work out pretty well. It didn't. Today, again, we're recording this on Monday, got to the point that he's been in a fight with Brescia and he showed up at training and they didn't even open the door for him. So quite the ending there. But I want to ask you, I've already seen Alex already on Twitter, a lot of revisionist history, at least that's how I would define it. People making a lot of excuses for Balotelli, saying, you know, he could have been so much better and whatnot. So I want to ask you, Alex, if we did this exercise where, you know, we play out Balotelli's career 10 times, 10 different ways with him, you know, with different clubs, different managers, but the only constant is Balotelli. In your opinion, out of those 10 times, how many times do we have a career? I'm not even going to say like a very good career, but a career that we could say definitely better than what we got so far.
Nah, there's no way. There's no way that it would be that different. I'm sorry. He's the constant. That's how I figure out problems, David, at least now. Who's the constant in ongoing feuds or ongoing disappointments or ongoing failure? Is there a constant? The constant is Mario Balotelli. And the old saying, a leopard doesn't change his spots. Come on. You can be the biggest Balotelli fan or you can feel like it's hip to kind of go with that take, but it's really not. It's just wrong. I mean, sure, to answer your question a little bit more than just outright refuting this, if he was in the perfect situation, and I don't even know that we would know what that is, us normal people. We would need a sports psychologist or a scientist to figure out the perfect balance in a dressing room for Mario Balotelli. It's got to have some people he's cool with, but it's also got to have some people that don't really like him to a certain extent that he makes it upon himself to prove them wrong. So it can't be all people he's cool with, because then Mario Balotelli would have too much fun. And it can't be all people that don't like him, because then he's going to get pouty and he's just going to leave. So it's got to be the perfect balance. And then on top of all that, the manager has to be perfect for him. So are people understanding why we can replay it? And by the way, he's been on a damn load of teams. You would think, oh, well, one of those, if you want to go with this theory, folks, you would think that, all right, well, I mean, I know he has had some okay seasons, some good moments, but nonetheless, he hasn't put together a full season. So you would think that there would be a few outliers already. There are really not. We know his ability. We know his talent. But put it this way, if he wasn't the character he is, even with that talent, would we give a rat's ass about him? No. He almost overrates himself because of who he is. And that's the harsh truth. We have seen a lot of players with outrageous talent that haven't amounted to a lot. We talk about Balotelli extra because he's very unique. So absolutely not. I think, sure, like I said, there'd be a couple outliers if you were to do this over and over with him in different situations. But it would need to be the perfect balance. And even then, he wouldn't be this player with one team for 4, 5, 6 years. No chance. He will not have that stability. He's not going to bring that. And that's just not even me bashing Balotelli. It might sound like that. I like him. I think he's good for the game. But no. No way. I'm just being honest. So that's my opinion, David. What about you?
Yeah, well said, Alex. Yeah, definitely like the constant, then people don't change their spots. And look, I think in a lot of times it's very interesting to do this exercise and ask yourself, you know, how differently would a player's career play out, different, you know, coaches, teams and whatnot. But I'm with you. I don't think anything would change with Balotelli. The thing that needs to change is him. You know, I've often said it when I think of Balotelli's career, I always go back to A Bronx Tale, the movie with De Niro, and he tells his young son that there's nothing sadder in life than wasted talent. And that's what I feel really is going to be Balotelli's legacy. You know, I was just looking now at his career. You know, A, it's amazing. He's been in our lives really for a long time. Came on the scenes 2007 at Inter. He's been, had 14 seasons already. Out of those 14 seasons, had 5 seasons with over 10 goals, you know. So a little bit disappointing. Obviously, had all the talent in the world. I think, you know, him going to Brescia, his hometown club, you would think, oh, you know, he's had up and down career. He'd be somewhat motivated there. Didn't really work out. And again, I go back to the fact that I think it's kind of symbolic that it ends. I mean, it hasn't ended because there's going to be some litigation, and knowing who his agent is, I'm sure this will drag on for a little bit, but that they wouldn't even open the training door for him is really telling there. So I agree with you. I don't think much would change. And I'm with you. I like Balotelli. I've always said it for a lot of reasons. There's a lot about him that I like. But yeah, there's really nothing more infuriating than wasted talent. But I'm already seeing, you know, he's still only 29. He'll turn 30 in 2 months. You know, there's bound to be a team willing to give him a chance. You know, who knows what will be next? Will it be Turkey? Will it be the United States? Would it be Brazil? But I think this is the type of level for him. I'm not sure, you know, if we'll ever see him on a top team again in a classic league. And to me, that's really sad to a certain extent, but it's not so sad because I really think that really the only person to blame here is Balotelli. And, you know, just imagine, I'm not saying he needs to have, you know, the mentality of a De Rossi. There's been some players, you know, had a little bit of eccentric characters. But to me, it really comes down to lack of effort. Even Brescia's current manager, Diego Lopez, who said, you know, Balotelli didn't even show up for the Zoom meetings to kind of check in to see how he was doing physically. So it's going to be fun to see Cellino's, Brescia's president, and Mino Raiola go at it over the contract. And, you know, in a way, I almost think this is kind of a fitting end for Balotelli's career in Serie A. I mean, is it possible someone else gambles on him in the future? Maybe, but I think this is definitely going to make it much less likely.
Well, I do hope there is a happy ending. I certainly do. I mean, it could be the most random team, but if he goes to a random team, even a lesser team, and has some great moments, well, that's really all you want to see from Balotelli. All right, so
Settle for like Jovinko going to Toronto, right, and becoming an idol there. I mean, they have very different personalities, but in my mind, that would be a really nice way for Ballo to go at this point.
And he would get even more attention if he did what Giovinco did. Giovinco got a lot of attention at the time, especially in the United States, and I don't know, maybe in Italy as well, I assume. But if Balotelli does that, he's just obviously a more fun guy to cover, even though Giovinco's not boring. It's Balotelli we're talking about here. All right, so speaking of talking about something, David, let's move on to some new news here. What did you make of the news that if Serie A can't be finished, if something happens with COVID-19, really hope it doesn't, what do you make of the news that they could decide Serie A by a new algorithm?
A lot of thoughts on this, and I mean, I think if you had to pick a league that is the least suited to be decided by an algorithm, it would have to be Serie A. I mean, it would be really towards the top, a league known for conspiracy theories, you know, people accusing leagues, favoring some teams over others, teams getting busted with issues. You know, there was also some theories on why Serie A, you know, shut down after Juve Inter. So this opens up doors for like a million different complaints there. And, you know, could the algorithm, you know, maybe work on a league like the NBA? Yeah, probably. Maybe some football leagues, but it would be tough. So, yeah, this is going to be very difficult. On the topic of, you know, the league returning, you know, the news that I read today that really made me scratch my head is that, you know, the health minister in Italy is looking into potentially bringing fans back into the stadium, you know, obviously not full capacity, but some capacity this summer. And my reaction to that is, you know, boy, you know, you guys can't even decide, take away this rule that if one person tests positive, the entire team has to quarantine, which really would shut down the season altogether if that happens once the game start, because you take a team out of the equation for 2 weeks with games every 3 days, the schedule's not going to get done. So here they are, they still have that requirement, and they're talking about bringing people back in the stadium. That to me is pretty contradictory. To me, it's either you care about the pandemic, the COVID, and Italy, let's not forget, was really the country that was hit as hard as anything. So I get being sensitive to that, and I've said many times, I don't get the sense there's a huge appetite in Italy for calcio coming back, but that is really contradictory that you're saying we're going to keep this rule, but we'll also look into bringing fans back in. So, you know, you guys know how I feel about bureaucracy in Italy. This definitely goes down in the annals as a pretty great example of the power of bureaucracy in Italy.
All right. Interesting. Well, David, here still at the top, let's talk about one more thing. Let's get a little bit more specific on a person. How would you rate Rocco Commisso's first year at Fiorentina?
Very interesting. So, you know, Alex, sometimes people ask me, you know, what are the things that annoy me? What makes me consider someone overrated? And, you know, I think sometimes this would kind of, this scenario that I'm going to describe falls a little bit on it, but this is really meant to be a compliment to Commisso, not, you know, disparaging him. But, you know, Fiorentina, a year after he took over, is really not that much better off. You look in the standings, they're in 13th place right now. They are behind Hellas Verona, Parma, Bologna, Cagliari, Sassuolo, which I called at the beginning of the season. I was like, I think a lot of people are overrating Fiorentina. And I was like, I wouldn't be surprised if Sassuolo is still on top. And Fiorentina is still there. Now, they're not totally in the relegation zone, but they're much closer to the relegation zone than they are to the Europa League. So when I saw all the celebration on Commisso's first year, that was my first reaction, was like, okay, results just ain't that much better. And if you read the comments, you would think that Fiorentina is like competing for a Champions League spot now. But what I will say, and this is why I mean this kind of as a compliment to Commisso, is I give him a lot of credit, because despite that, he is getting praised a ton. And I think he deserves it, because A, for the first thing, he inherited a horrible situation from the Della Valle, who were completely checked out at Fiorentina. So he inherited a bad situation there. He definitely made a lot of investments in the team, brought in Ribéry, did everything he could to keep Chiesa. I mean, they stumbled upon Castrovilli, and that's where you have to give credit to Montella. And, you know, we can question Commisso's decision to keep Montella, which in retrospect was not a good idea. But the silver lining is it was Montella who saw Castrovilli in the summer retreat and was like, we're not loaning him out, we're keeping him. So that's another thing that you could say kind of Commisso stumbled onto that. But I think he deserves a lot of credit because of the presence he's made felt for Fiorentina fans. He's really held himself accountable, which I really, really respect. And he's made himself very visible with Fiorentina fans. He's gone to Florence many times. And I've said it many times, I think that's really, that has been Pallotta's, maybe his biggest mistake at Roma is just not being more present, not, you know, being really in Rome and showing it. So I think Commisso has done a lot of things right there. I'm sure a year in, he wouldn't have expected to be in the standings where he is now. And that also shows you like how hard it is to turn things around. Like, I think when I look at Fiorentina, I see a club that should be at least kind of where in the space Atalanta's in now. And also, you know, eventually maybe where Lazio is. Though when you look at Fiorentina's payroll, I mean, it's more in the Lazio range than, say, Sassuolo. So there's a lot of reasons to be very optimistic about Comiso. I give him a lot of credit. I think it's great that he's accountable there. But let's start seeing some results. And I think the next big decision for him, it's going to be really, really important that I'm watching, is what he's going to do with the manager position. If he brings back Iachini next season, that's going to be a little tough sell on the Fiorentina project. So let's see what happens there. So overall, I want to say we need more owners like Comiso and Serie A. And it's really the power of personality and how bad it was before that I think people have completely overlooked the results to praise him. But Serie A is better off for having Comiso. There's no doubt about it. Okay, so now let's get the transfers. I know a lot of you are tuning in to listen to this. So by the way, I also combined a couple of our listener questions on these as we get to the hot transfer topics. So Alex, what are we leading off with?
All right, David, it really is transfer season. Even though it's not, it is, if that makes any sense. So first one we're going to talk about here, why is Juve even linked to Kumbula? And do you see them beating Inter in the race for him?
Yeah, so, you know, Kumbula has been great this season at Verona. Young defender, if he's 19 or 20. That guy can be a stud defender for 10, 12 years. Kind of reminiscent of Barzagli, which is also maybe why Juve likes him. But let's look at Juve's squad. I mean, you have Bonucci, big salary. De Ligt, very big investment. You have Demiral, who's really a very interesting up-and-coming defender. And you have Chiellini, who is, you know, at the end of his career. We also know Juve's midfield, not good. It's a lot of help. And, you know, as we're recording, it looks like Tonali saying that he's Inter's player to lose might be slightly overrated, but it's not that far off either. So you see Inter, you know, improving. And if they bring Tonali in, I would say that's at least the third midfielder they've signed recently that could start for Juve. And I always do that exercise, is ask myself, is a player good enough to start for Juve as my barometer for what Inter needs to do? They've done it in the midfield. So you look at Juve, who's very deep at center back. Why would they be interested in Kumbula? And I think this has to do with Chiellini and Bonucci's age and Juve historically, how much they care about center backs. And that's really a Juve staple, if you will. And when I read that Inter, who are in the lead right now to sign Kumbula, are willing to leave him at Verona for another season, that's when it started making sense for me. I was like, you know what? For Juve, if they bought him on that formula and they get him and they're like, okay, we want down the road to know we have this stud young center back, but we're going to leave him at Verona while Chiellini plays at least one more season, then in that sense, I could see that working. I know some people saw the interest in Kumbula as potentially a sign Demiral's being sold. Not impossible. I mean, they could make a nice plusvalenza on Demiral and then reinvest in Kumbula, but still have the short-term gain of the plusvalenza going on the books. I guess in that sense, it makes sense, but I look at it more. I bet you if Juve were to win the race, it really wouldn't surprise me if they lose Kumbula at Verona and they bring him back once Chiellini retires.
Gotcha. Well, excited to see this kid grow for sure. The more I do watch of him on the app Y-Scout, and also the more I hear about him from people that have watched him, it's pretty glowing. It's pretty glowing. Well, now, it's a pretty good segue and honestly unintentional, because the next question we have here for you, David, is talking about two young midfielders who have very glowing reports behind them as well. Could Juve pursue Houssem Aouar, especially if Tonali goes to Inter?
Yeah, no, I think this is a possibility. Now, I do think Zaniolo's really the midfielder Juve wants. And we'll get to it in a second on Roma. And I wonder if there, I was always thinking Zaniolo next season at Juve, that he would, you know, stay at Roma, get ready for the Euro, recover from the injury, and then make the move to Juve. But seeing Roma's financial situation, I wouldn't exclude it. So I would say Zaniolo at the top, but AOR could absolutely be on Juve's radar. We know their history, which French players, I could see that happening. But on this topic, Alex, I want to ask you, because I've seen, you know, some responses, one of the tweets on AOR and Juve, that there were some people saying, you know what, Lyon is kind of fool's gold, if you will. It's a little bit like Atalanta. The players look great there, but when they go elsewhere, it typically doesn't work out. Do you think there's something to this?
I mean, for me, it's tough. My favorite player really ever, if you exclude Lampard, came from Ligue 1, and God, was he a success. I mean, you know, I have to answer this in a little bit of a petty way, and it's a way we don't like to do on the podcast. We usually don't like to do league shaming, and I'm not shaming, but we don't even like to do league ranking, because it really is subjective. But for me, David, it's clear for me the worst quality of the top five leagues, the classic top five leagues. It is Ligue 1, in my opinion. I mean, I have to be honest. So the one thing that scares me is that a lot of players are untested from that league. And when I say untested, I mean that it is just a league where I know there are rivalries, but it's not a league where a mid-table game feels important at all, like at all. And even just on someone like Houssem Aouar, who's a really nice player, you have to do a lot of your rating and just your positive talking about him based off projection. He does have good games. He's actually looked good in the Champions League as well. You can see the quality. But then he faces a bad team in Ligue 1, and he doesn't play well. So, I mean, it's hard to get up. I had on my podcast, I had Julien Laurens on from ESPN, who covers the French league well. And he kind of did admit, and he knows that league very well, it's hard to get up for some of these games, for some of these athletes. So I think when a team pulls a player out of Ligue 1, the one worry is, how's he going to be in a different atmosphere, in bigger games and more games that have a true atmosphere to them, where it really feels like there's a lot on the line, where the media is different, where just the expectations are different. So I do think that's a worry. But just on a pure talent level, it has some of the best talents. So it's certainly not a league to absolutely shame and sneeze at. But I do think, yeah, maybe there is a little bit more room for caution, because you just don't know how the move's always going to go. But there are obviously examples where the move was great for the player, but usually those players are going to make it anywhere. So it's an interesting subject. And yeah, I would say that your main caution would be, well, are they tested enough? Do they even know what life is like here? Especially, Italy's a great country to kind of talk about that. I'm not saying, once again, there isn't tradition in France, but Julien talked about it. Football doesn't mean as much in France. It doesn't mean as much in France. It's actually one of the reasons why they were okay with just kind of canceling the league compared to some other countries. So
yeah, I think that's actually a very fair point. I had never thought of it in terms of them canceling the league, but I think you're on to something there for sure.
Yeah. You know, you heard the reports in England that they needed it back to lift the country's mood, which to me was at the time a little ridiculous. But nonetheless, Julien was like, well, that would never happen in France. The mood of the country is not dependent on how the football teams are doing. So, yeah, and players, obviously, that they can feel that, as where if they were playing in England or Italy, I think it would be a little bit different. All right. So, David, let's move on to this. Let's go to Roma. What are the odds that Pellegrini finds a new home?
Yeah, so Pellegrini, I would say after Zaniolo, is probably the big prize on Roma. Actually, really had a great season. I'm not big into stats, but his assist numbers are pretty telling. I will say he's one of the best passers in Serie A. I think he's a very complete old school number eight. Big fan of his. And look, he does have a cheap exit clause, 30 million euro. He's even in this post-pandemic world, and he's not even in his prime yet. Very significant. So, you know, you can get him for cheap. But here's the thing, you know, exit clauses really only matter if the player that has it on him agrees to let a team exercise it. And he's been really pretty loyal to Roma, because I think even last summer you would have found the team willing to pay $30 million for him. But now, you know, Roma is in a really tough financial situation, especially with the sale of the club not going through. As part of the sale for the club, Friedkin was going to pump in like a lot of money into the club right away for a recapitalization, and that didn't happen. So let's see. I have a feeling we are going to see a big swap between Juve and Roma before June 30th. I don't think Pellegrini will be in it, but I think we will see some other players. Really wouldn't surprise me if we see Rugani or Roma, some players going like that. We've heard under Cristante, players like that linked to Juve, and I would see that more as a financial move. We also could see Mandragora going to Roma, so they'll get some relief there. Then let's see if they have to sacrifice either Zaniolo or Pellegrini again. Even if he were to go for the exit clause, at least almost all of that would be a plusvalenza for Roma. So I think there is somewhat of a decent chance he leaves. And, you know, some people have said, look out for PSG if he goes. And that would be kind of sad to see after Verratti, another really good young Italian midfielder, go there.
All right. We'll look out for that potential swap between Juve and Roma. Moving on, David, let's talk about this. What did you make of Milan extending Bonaventura's contract through the end of the 1920 season?
Yeah, this was very interesting, because I got to be honest, I was really surprised when I saw the announcement, because I was going on the assumption, and shame on me, I shouldn't have assumed that, you know, they were just going to, the contracts would automatically be extended through the end of the season. So Bonaventura had an expiring deal. And I also assumed that players out on loan would just stay where they were to complete the season with their current squad, but turns out that is not the case. And I found that out the hard way with Bonaventura's extension. What I found interesting is that they just decided to extend through the end of the 2019-20 season. It's not that they also extended beyond this. So he'll still be available on a Bosman, and he's been heavily linked to Torino. So let's see what happens there. I saw then today to Lallana with Liverpool, exactly same thing. He has an expiring deal. I saw to some players on loan were called back to their original team. Interestingly, today, Roma sporting director Petracchi said that, you know, they hope to be able to keep Mkhitaryan and Smalling at least through the end of the season and even beyond that. So, yeah, that was interesting about Bonaventura. But what I also found interesting, that it was just for these 2 months, that it wasn't beyond there. So if a team wants to sign him on a Bosman, they still can.
Interesting. Very interesting. Okay. All right, David. Would a combination of Florenzi, DePaul, and Kumbula be attainable for a club like Atalanta?
It's a good question. And, you know, Atalanta's definitely been more ambitious. I mean, you look at last summer, Muriel, they keep Pazalic. And I know we've heard a million times they're going to redeem his rights from Chelsea. So they definitely, and even in January, they signed a few, brought Caldara back. So they are spending money. They've already made a huge plusvalenza on Kulusevski, who they don't have to replace because he wasn't on their squad. So they could be aggressive in the summer, and I'd be very curious to see what they've done. Specifically on these players, I would say Florenzi, and we talked about Florenzi and Atalanta even about 3 weeks ago on the pod. That could happen, and I think for Florenzi, it would be a great place to relaunch his career. I wonder if it would be on loan or on a permanent deal. He has a very high salary, though, so that's one thing. His salary is out of Atalanta's range, so curious to see what happens there. I look at DePaul as if they sign him from Udinese, kind of being a repeat of the Muriel deal. So an established player, international caliber player that they signed. That could happen. Kumbula, I would have a little reservations, because Kumbula, A, is very expensive and he's a good prospect. Atalanta tends to develop those prospects and maybe sign them the year before they break out, like Kumbula. So that of the three, I would say, is probably the most unattainable. Also because they brought back Caldara. But interesting question. I like how the listener's thinking, and I do think we will see an aggressive Atalanta in the summer because, again, they have the Kulusevski cash under their belt.
Okay. All right, David. Last one here of this segment. Which Serie A club should put rivalries aside and complete some swap deals to help each other out?
Yeah, so I want to give a shout out to Abdul Rahman, one of our listeners who always sends a ton of great questions. This was one of them. To shout out to him, we appreciate both his support as a listener and as a co-writer of the show and his excellent questions. I like what he's thinking because I've been telling you guys for a long time, be ready for a lot more swap deals. So I've been thinking about this and what would be the attributes of clubs that should do deals with them. And I'm looking at clubs mainly that have financial concerns. So it doesn't surprise me that Juve and Roma are ready to play ball again after Spinazzola and Luca Pellegrini swap last year. There was some bad blood when Juve used the exit clause on Pjanic, but now things are good with Roma. So I think you're going to see more clubs, you know, making these sorts of forgetting past transgressions and help each other now. So maybe look for clubs that both have financial concerns. So I was thinking maybe Sampdoria and Genoa cross town. Like, would the fans accept that? Maybe. So you could see some swaps there. Milan and Roma. I mean, they have a good relationship, but I think you could see more there. Like, Milan and Inter are in a pretty different financial situations now. Maybe even Juve and Fiorentina, who have had a bad relationship in the past, maybe they play ball with Chiesa because it feels like there's really no one left willing to spend a ton on Chiesa. So great question from Abdul. Keep them coming. We really appreciate it. So before we get to Grant Wall, the interview, which is excellent and will be available to all, let's get to our patrons. As always, if you enjoy Calcioland, consider becoming a patron. A, you'll hear longer versions of our pod. Usually do 15, 20 minutes extra for patrons every episode. You'll get all your questions answered. We also still have some awesome articles on the site, and we are using some of the proceeds from Patreon to support a great nonprofit in Italy called Insuperabili. So if you want to contribute to that, you'll also be joining an awesome community of fans. So our next guest needs no introduction. One of the most prominent journalists in the sport in the world. Definitely kind of one of the reference points, if not the reference point for the sport here in the U.S. Grant Wall, who has been a wonderful friend, wonderful mentor. You know, one thing that stands out to me, I've gotten to know quite a few journalists, and those at the top, like Grant, are always really wonderful people, always willing to share knowledge and help out. So I'm very excited to have Grant on the podcast today. He recently launched his new podcast, Football, which is really terrific. We'll talk a little bit about that. Recently had a Serie A related guest, so the timing is perfect to welcome back Grant to Calcioland, as we say in Italy. Bentornato, Grant. Really wonderful to have you.
Thanks so much. It's great to talk to you again. Thank you for that wonderful introduction and just for being so supportive as a friend of getting my podcast going. And I happened to see you. You were one of the last people I saw pre-virus up in Boston out at a restaurant, and it seems like it was about 5 years ago, but it was nice. Actually the first week of March.
Yeah, and that's a perfect segue. You are definitely a pro, because I want to talk to you a little bit about the virus. And yeah, you actually, Grant, are the last person that I've seen in a bar or restaurant, last person I've really interacted with outside. And a lot of times has passed. And, you know, since then you launched your podcast, but what's also happening is we saw the Bundesliga return. We saw the Portuguese league return. This week we have La Liga. Serie A is expected to come back. And obviously you are one of the most prominent journalists in the sport in the world, but you're also married to a doctor who anyone who's watched CNN is familiar with her. She's a wonderful resource on all this. So the first question I wanted to ask you is two parts. because you know a lot about the situation with the virus, when you hear about leagues starting again, what are some of the protocols? What are some of the things that you are looking for them to do to minimize risks? And beyond that, looking at the whole environment, looking at the health in the world, do you think it's even necessary for sports to come back at all right now?
I mean, these are good questions, right? Dr. Celine Gounder is my wife. She's a medical analyst on CNN, and she's actually been a really good resource for me to learn about how sports leagues are dealing with the virus and just trying to be safe. And obviously the Bundesliga got a head start on all the other major soccer leagues, mainly because Germany as a country has dealt with the virus better than most countries. Mm-hmm. And so the protocols that Germany and the Bundesliga came up with, which had to get government approval to start playing again, appear so far to have worked well. We have not seen any positive tests in the Bundesliga yet. And, you know, they're 3 weeks into this now. And obviously they went in a very German way into great detail. Their protocol book was very thick. And I had Tyler Adams come on my podcast after the first week to sort of explain how he experienced that as a player with RB Leipzig. And it was really intense, he said, just all the different things that they had to do beyond just getting tested as much as they did, just game day protocols, all those things that the players and everyone associated with putting on a game had to go through. And they really limited the amount of people who were in the stadiums as well, including support staff, media, all those things. And Germany has done a good job. And I can guarantee you that every other soccer league and every other U.S. sports league is going to be paying close attention to what Germany has done and done so far successfully. But in terms of can or should sports be coming back, I do think it's a question we should be asking. My personal feeling is as long as they can come back safely, as Germany has, then I'm okay with it. You know, the leagues want to get back because they've been taking a financial hit. And also, I think the best expression from my end is that it was a little piece of humanity coming back when the Bundesliga started playing again. And so as long as they can do it safely, as long as they're not taking tests away from the general public, because you do need a lot of tests to make sure that these games can go off okay, I'm okay with it. And we'll just see how it goes. I really have my fingers crossed about other countries like England, Italy, Spain, and the U.S. getting back going with their soccer leagues and potentially other leagues like the NBA. You know, we in the U.S. and England didn't handle the virus overall as well as Germany did. And so I hope we don't screw it up.
You know, Grant, you made a point there that I think is so, so important, is that, you know, Germany handled this so well from the get-go, definitely better than a lot of other places. And I think it's really important that we don't assume that model can work everywhere else, because they have done a lot of good work ahead of time. So I think that's really, really a good point there. So speaking of the Bundesliga, and, you know, there's a lot of American players there, and some of them have been featured on your podcast. Were you surprised by the public displays in the Bundesliga in support of the protests that are going on here in the United States?
You know, I do think a lot of people are surprised by how big the protests have gotten in Europe and other cities around other, you know, places around the world. Obviously, racism is awful in a lot of places, not just the United States. And so I think once we started seeing big protests in cities like Berlin and London and Rome, just from the general public, that it didn't surprise me necessarily that you would see players like Weston McKennie, the American player for Schalke, was probably the first thing I saw where he had something honoring George Floyd on his arm. for a game. But, you know, the same day later on, we saw Jadon Sancho for Borussia Dortmund. Achraf Hakimi had a shirt as well. And then you started to see after that, which I think this is really important, is white players in Germany starting to support everything that was going on with the protest, saying Black Lives Matter, really doing what I think is the most necessary thing for real action. Because if racism is going to change significantly in any real way, that's got to come from the white community, not the Black community. And I spent a lot of time over the years with Lilian Thuram, the former French World Cup winner, played in Italy, obviously, among other places. And we did an event at New York University a few years ago about he really devoted his post-playing career to anti-racism. And so it was a really fascinating conversation where we talked about what he had seen and experienced during his playing career, but also what he's working on now, really at a sort of grassroots level all over Europe. It's really impressive. Obviously, his son Marcus Thuram had a demonstration as well after he scored a goal for Gladbach. And clearly, Lilian Thuram's had an influence on his son. But Lilian always told me, you know, it's up to the white community. Why is it, he would ask, that after a racist incident during a football match, the media would ask questions to the Black player who is the target of the racism, whether it's Moise Kean or Romelu Lukaku, or, you know, there's plenty of examples over the years. He's like, why don't you ask the white players what they think about it? And I still think, you know, obviously we've seen a lot of racist incidents in European football this year in stadiums, including in Italy. And I think we really do need to see even more support from the white players, including walking off the field when these things happen. And we'll have to wait and see now if that fundamentally changes, that we will see players coming off the field, because earlier in the season, we would see Black players being encouraged by their white teammates to stay on the field. And I think that's a real problem.
Very interesting. You know what I was thinking when you were talking is Bonucci, who famously didn't have great words when Moise Kean was involved with a racist incident a while back at Juve. And he said, oh, it's a 50-50. He's part of, he instigated it. Now he's turned around and has shown support online. So let's see if the tide has really changed in Italy too. But speaking of Italy, I was thinking of one of my favorite cover stories that you did when you were at Sports Illustrated, and you've done quite a few on soccer, football, and was the one on Balotelli, which I think was at least 5-6 years ago, I want to say, maybe even more. And that was really, it felt like Balotelli was reaching the apex of his career. He's on the cover of the most prominent sports magazine in the United States back then. Based on your interaction with him during the interview, what you observed of him, of his career, are you surprised that that period during the interview was essentially the apex, and for a lot of ways his career has taken a turn for the worse since then? Are you surprised by that development?
I am, to the extent that things have fallen for Mario Balotelli, because that story came out at the start of the season in 2013. So the latter half of 2013, he was on the cover of Sports Illustrated. He had had a very good year of 2012, as you know. And there was a real feeling that he could be one of the big stars from World Cup 2014. And obviously, that didn't happen, and things at club level didn't go very well at all after that. And so I like Mario Balotelli a lot personally, and I was really proud of how revealing he was in that interview with me. I remember telling him at the start of the interview, he was a big President Obama fan, and I told him beforehand, you know, there's a decent chance Obama will read this story. Which is true. And because, you know, he's a Sports Illustrated reader. And at that point, Mario really locked in on that interview and spoke about his experiences in Italy and elsewhere. And I'd heard him speak English a few times before, but he was even better than I thought he would be in English. Very expressive, and just a really good interview. I came out of it kind of rooting for him. And I know there have been a lot of ups and downs since then, and recently here, you know, he's not going to be at Brescia anymore. I hope he comes to MLS. I think the timing is right. I think he could use a change to his career. Unfortunately, I think there's a bit of a reputation, you know, as we saw with Sebastian Giovinco, that if you go to MLS, your national team career is essentially done when it comes to Italian coaches. And that might be the case, but it's not like people are wanting him called up to the national team right now.
Anyways, yeah, so, for sure.
And so I think a change of scenery would be good for Mario. I think, you know, why not LA? They just got rid of one of their players, Katai, because of a crazy racist incident involving his wife. So, like, why not bring in Mario, who has been very anti-racist, very publicly over the years? I think that would be a good message. I know Mario likes the United States, and it could be the kind of fun thing for his career, and he could certainly get paid well here, and sort of maybe get a rebirth.
Yeah, very interesting. So, as you mentioned, with Brescia, there's definitely a parting of the ways. It sounds like you are in favor of coming to MLS. Makes sense to me as well. How do you think the fans would receive him in general? Do you think there would be a good reception for him if he were to come to the United States?
I do, because I think American sports fans like big personalities. We really liked it when Zlatan Ibrahimovic came here. And
yeah.
And MLS needs larger than life personalities. You know, there's a little too much of a blandness about the league at times. And so you need the people like Zlatan who, you know, put butts in seats, not just because they are always a threat to score goals, but because you kind of are curious to see how they go about doing what they do. And I don't think Mario Balotelli has lost so much that he's incapable of being a provocative player who can score goals. And given the right situation in MLS, I think that could be a pretty cool thing. I think you'd have to have a good fit with his teammates, with his coach, but I still think he's got something left.
Okay. Yeah, I agree with you. And I kind of would like to see it. And he would be coming at a very interesting part of his career, but he's only 30. He's definitely has some good years left in him. So I want to touch, we're going to talk about your podcast in a second, which is really excellent. But every time I have a journalist of your caliber on, I always like to pick their brains. We have a lot of listeners that are writers, podcasters, and you know, your insight is very, very valuable. So you're in the new phase of your career. You were for over 20 years at Sports Illustrated. I think that was your only real job, and correct me if I'm wrong.
Yeah.
Obviously, over 20 years ago, it was a very different landscape in media than it is today, where you're starting this podcast, and it's really, really wonderful. But I want to ask you, you were one of our original guests, and I still remember very distinctively some of the things you told us the first time you were on over 3 years ago. And you mentioned, you know, no matter what you do, always try to do quality work, try to learn a lot of things. It's a really good lesson. You also mentioned the importance of maybe learning another language and talking to the people you're interviewing, if possible, in their language. Aside from those that are really, really great tips, I want to ask you, you know, what are some attributes that you think still apply when you were getting started in your career over 20 years ago today? And maybe some other attributes that you think are even more important today in this environment?
Yeah, I mean, some things have always held true. And I think some things are more important in today's media landscape than they were 20 years ago. What I would say has always been the case and remains so is if you can write, you can go a long ways. The ability to write well, to write clearly, to organize a story, whether it's a long story or a short story or something in between, is always going to be valuable. You know, if you're in the media business, and I'm always surprised sometimes by how rare that skill is, even today. So if you can write and work at it, and part of getting better as a writer is doing a lot of reading. And, you know, for me, over the years, there have been some standbys. You know, that's like reading the New Yorker magazine, reading, you know, reading the New York Times, you know, reading things that aren't just sports, is, I think, important to your writing. And sort of thinking about, if you read a magazine story in the New Yorker, well, how is that story organized? You know, what was the writer thinking about as he or she put this together, and sort of trying to imagine that thought process? And I think the craft is important. You know, I would also say that more recently, the way things have changed, you know, when I started out at Sports Illustrated in 1996, there was just one print magazine a week, and there was really no functioning website. There were no podcasts. Mm-hmm. There was no video. And so for me, over the years, it was really important to become proficient at different platforms. So podcasts became one of those things, you know, whether that's a weekly podcast or whether that's a storytelling podcast series that requires maybe a lot more production and interviews. You know, and being comfortable doing video, being comfortable in front of a camera, and in different ways. Like, you know, I didn't have formal training of video stuff. And so, like, standing up in front of a camera and talking for 90 seconds to 3 minutes is not the easiest thing to do the first time you do it. And I can remember the first time I had to do that was 2010 World Cup, where SI literally gave me a tripod and a camera, and not even a producer or a camera guy. And I'm standing outside World Cup stadiums trying to deliver these stand-ups. And I was terrible at it at first, and slowly got a little better over the years. And so those types of skills, I think, are important to have a wide range of things you can do. It's still important, as I mentioned to you the last time, to, you know, I think, be able to work in not just English. You know, in this country, Spanish typically ends up being the most useful second language to learn, but not just to learn it, to be proficient and be able to work in it. So those types of things, those skills, I think, if you're getting into media, will take you a long ways even now. And so, you know, like, that's the suggestion I would have, is to not just be proficient at one thing.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Well, one thing you are definitely very proficient at is podcasting. And I've really enjoyed listening to Football, your new show. You've gotten 8 under your belt so far. You've had a wonderful guest, Tyler Adams, who you mentioned earlier, Julie Foudy, London Donovan, Marcelo Balboa, Roberto Martinez, and more recently, even a great Serie A guest in Henrik Mkhitaryan. But tell our listeners what they can expect in general, what they would find if they tune into your show.
Yeah, I'm really enjoying doing it. The show is based on interviews, and not just like, you know, 4 or 5 minute interviews. These are interviews anywhere from 20 minutes to 40 minutes, where you're really getting in depth with somebody. And the soccer world is so big, and yet I think it's possible to get people from all the different parts of the soccer world, and we pay attention to so many different aspects of the soccer world here in the United States, to reveal something about those people through the process of interviewing. And I'm always fascinated by what makes a good interview. And so one lesson I got early on from the Miami Herald editor, I was an intern there back in 96, he said, ask questions you don't know the answer to. So if you do your preparation and ask questions you don't know the answer to, you're going to learn new things, and your audience will too. And I'm genuinely curious about everybody I bring on. You know, Mkhitaryan was really good. Not only does he speak English well, he speaks 6 languages well. He didn't quite give himself Portuguese, or he would have been at 7. He says it's not as good as it used to be. But, you know, we talked also about how that ability to learn languages quickly has helped him adapt, including in Italy. And, you know, for a guy from Armenia, he's, you know, far and away the best player ever from Armenia, you know, there's a similarity a little bit with the United States, where like the U.S. has never still, in my opinion, produced a true male soccer superstar. And, you know, he's kind of the first one from his country, Armenia. And so in a way, he's a pioneer. And so it's been really, it was interesting to talk to him about those experiences over the years. And so with Mkhitaryan, as with anybody who's come on the podcast, I try to pick interesting guests. I like to have star power, but not just for star power's sake. I think it's important to get people who have shown that they are interesting interviews elsewhere, because I don't want to cheat my listeners. And, and I want to have a good balance of guests from Europe, like Mkhitaryan, like Roberto Martinez, is the coach of the number one ranked FIFA team in the world in Belgium. But have a balance with American guests, and also women's soccer too. So Julie Foudy came on. We're going to have the commissioner of the Women's League come on. They actually are returning to play very soon. She's doing a lot of impressive things in her first year on the job. Her name's Lisa Baird. And just want to give our listeners a variety of interesting experiences. And we come out twice a week, Mondays and Thursdays. Occasionally we'll have a bonus episode if I get a bunch of interviews in a week. And you know, we also have a bit of a roundup of soccer news, where I'll talk to one of the guys from the Total Soccer Show who I'm partnered with. And overall, it's just a lot of fun to be doing what I love again, and reminding myself that that's the case. And I hope listeners enjoy it too.
Yeah, no, it's definitely really, really wonderful. I thought the Mkhitaryan one, you did a fantastic job, and he's not giving himself enough credit. I mean, his Italian, when I first heard it, I was just blown away. I'm sure his Portuguese is really quite good. So you have a great variety of guests. I've really enjoyed all the topics. Tell me a few of the attributes that, in your career, even before the podcast, that you found that makes someone a good guest for these sorts of interviews?
You know, you find out pretty early on if someone is going to play ball. And I make sure when I set up an interview that I let them know, so we're on the same page. I'm looking for, you know, 20 to 30 minutes here. This isn't just a really quick interview. And I think you set a tone early on with the questions you ask that show that you've prepared, that you find the interviewee interesting. And in a lot of cases, I've interviewed some of these interview guests before. Like Roberto Martinez has a whole chapter in my book that came out a couple of years ago. So so he and I knew each other well. Basically, everybody except Mkhitaryan, I have relationships with, I've interviewed before. And it gets interesting as a challenge to me when I'm interviewing somebody for the first time, in Mkhitaryan's case, or in Balotelli's case, when I interviewed him back in 2013, where you just, it's a process of discovery, an interview, and you're sort of doing it in real time. And it was very clear that this guy was interested in doing the interview. And, you know, that's the start from what you're looking for. And I'm showing him that I'm curious about his story and things I've learned about him over the years. And it's sort of a, you know, it's a mutually, it's a two-way interaction, right? And I was just really pleased with how engaged Mkhitaryan was. And so, yeah, I think that comes through in the interview.
No, it certainly does. Absolutely. So definitely everyone check out Grant's new podcast, Football. Any podcast that is starting, and you hear it all the time, but it's absolutely true, please subscribe, rate, and review Grant's show. It will definitely help a lot. And trust me, it's not just because we're friends. The quality of these podcasts is really outstanding. So before I let you go, Grant, I just want to ask you about your discovery of a new Italian cold cut that someone brought to your attention, Speck. So I want to ask you, what was it like to discover Speck during this year?
Thank you for your suggestion. I live right near Eataly here in New York City, in Chelsea, and I get a lot of my groceries there. I cook a lot. I am the main cook in our household, and that has especially been the case with my wife being so busy during COVID. But I've always been a prosciutto guy.
Yeah,
for good reason. But yeah. You suggested that I open my horizons and try spec. And I'm very glad you did that because I'm a big fan of spec now. It's, you know, it's smokier.
Yeah.
And I need to probably be a little more creative because I tend to just kind of, you know, eat it in a snacking way. It's good stuff. Guanciale is another thing I've gotten into quite a bit. I make a good bucatini alla matriciana at home. I make a giant pot for 8 people. It lasts about a week. But I've even gotten to the point with guanciale where I'll throw some of it in a pan and just have that sort of to start my day sometimes, which is probably not the healthiest thing in the world, but it's pretty awesome.
Yeah, no, people don't know about you is that you really are an amazing cook. I think you, I don't know if you got the title King of Vegetables or if you gave it to yourself, but it's very well deserved. And I look forward to seeing how you add spec to the mix there. But Grant, I can't thank you enough. You've been a tremendous friend, a great mentor. It's really an honor to have had you on my podcast a few times. All the best with your show, Football. If you enjoyed this interview, definitely check it out. I know you won't be disappointed. So Grant, thank you so much. I look forward to chatting with you again, and I really enjoyed this interview.
Yeah, me too. I just want to congratulate you, David, on everything you've done building your podcast and growing your audience and just putting together something that is terrific for soccer fans to listen to. And it's an absolute pleasure to come on your show.